I know some of the things that go through your mind after taking the trip that we did. There's a lot of things that come to my memory that I want to tell you about our trip last week. But I'm going to say one thing that goes along with our study in Proverbs. And last week's lesson, by the way, was I had to look up to see what the verse was. It was so long ago. Proverbs 3, verse 9 and 10. To honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of thine increase, so shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses bursting out with new wine. Today's verse, Proverbs 27:10, you see it there in a minute, but I was thinking of something that happened to us while Nathan and I and Philip were on a separate island for a few days. We'd been at a house for a long time that, again, it's just that mindset that's hard for us to even fathom. We thought we were stopping to make a brief visit, and they said, well, they want to have a service with people in the neighborhood. There's a newborn baby. I thought it was going to be like a dedication. No, they just want family to come over so we can preach the gospel to them. We had that service in about an hour. Well, 2 hours later, they still didn't have the service yet, and then 3 hours later, they decided they're going to feed us lunch. That made me real nervous. We ate lunch, and then about an hour after that, we finally had the service. And we spent some time there with the newborn baby and I'm going to tell all the situation there. But while we were leaving, you got to understand, in a lot of these countries, there's constant construction. People are building a house, and they might put a wall up this year and put the next wall up next year. And everything's made out of concrete. That's just the way it is. There's many buildings that are left undone. Somebody will buy or inherit land, and they don't build on that property right away. So sometimes somebody else will come in and claim that land, which makes it a little interesting. But while we're getting ready to leave, this lady dressed in, she could have been going to church here on Sunday morning. A nice looking tall, thin lady, she all of a sudden just starting in this rage. She was going house to house, and folks were outside, and she just started on and on. And it was one of those situations, I didn't want to look at her. I thought I might die if I make eye contact with her. I didn't understand a word that was being said, but she was not a happy woman. I can guarantee you that. We were kind of getting ready to take shelter, and anytime anybody made contact, and start chewing them out, and just kind of like what I've seen people do to the preacher out in the parking lot or here sometimes. But she was just going on and on, I just thought, oh my, I don't know. And we finally got in the vehicle, got everything loaded. We're actually taking a family back, so we loaded up the family in our little vehicle that we had and squeezed everybody in. And we got in the vehicle. I said, Nathan, what in the world was that all about? He said, I don't know. I don't speak the language she was speaking. She wasn't speaking in Portuguese. She was speaking in a language kind of everybody's got their own little thing. But he had no idea what was going on. And finally, we got going down the road a little bit. I asked Philip, and he understood what she was saying. He explained that it was all about she had purchased some land a number of years ago, nobody had built, or she had not been able to build on that land, and now someone else was building a house on that land. And she was voicing her complaint to everybody in the world that she knew of. He said, that's just the way things are done here. You got to go around the neighborhood and get everybody on your side. That's their justice system. The more people you can gather together on your side, she'd be a good person to hire if you wanted her, everybody on your side. I wouldn't dare go against that thing. Whoa! I just thought, oh, wow. Talk about a raging raging fit of anger. I've never, it's been a long time since I've seen that big of a display of anger. I thought, what a sad world. And of course, we're more subtle. We just go on in private about someone else, right? But this week's verse that I want to look at, Proverbs 27 and verse number 10, it says, thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not. Neither go into thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity. For better is a neighbor that is near than a brother far off. Let's read it together, all right? Proverbs 27:10. Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not. Neither go into thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity. For better is a neighbor that is near than a brother far off. Proverbs 27:10. Does everybody have it memorized yet? That verse is, to be quite honest with you, it might be a little bit difficult. The wording is maybe not something, the sentence doesn't flow the way we would used to saying it. But there's some interesting things said, and I have memorized, looked at this verse many times. The last part of the verse, especially, better is a neighbor that is near than a brother that is far off, which is kind of a strange statement, it might seem, on the surface. I've just gotten this habit when I don't understand something in the Bible, I do one of two things. Especially as a young Christian, there's a lot of things you don't understand, you just keep reading until you do understand. We'll save that one for later. Or if you want to dig in and the Lord kind of directs your attention to something and you say, well, what exactly does that mean? You got to dig in and do some word studies and different ideas of different things that people see and go back to the original language and different things to try to figure out the exactly what the meaning of this verse is. And the more I study this, I thought, and actually I put this verse aside as one a long time ago for teaching in here, and I'm finally just now getting to it. But there's some great truths in this verse. And I want to just kind of give you an outline of the verse tonight, and we'll try to stick to that this evening. Garrett read ahead and read the only thing that he's interested in, the cartoon at the end. So we already got that done. Now let's go back to the beginning. All right, Garrett? Control your influencers. Is that a word? It is now. It's written right there. Okay? Control the things that influence you. I think that's a good summary of what this verse is talking about. The difference, and I've heard many different statements, and I just jotted down a couple of them, kind of ran a few things together to put a lot of thoughts into a couple of sentences. The difference between who you are today and who you will be tomorrow is determined by who and what you allow to influence you. And by the way, you allow people or things to influence you. You can either allow them to influence you or not allow them. It's your choice. And the people and circumstances different people and our circumstances do not define us. But how we respond to those people and circumstances, that's what defines us. Often I hear people say, well, they did this to me and that's why I'm doing that. Don't let them define you. Nobody can take your testimony away. Nobody can destroy you without you giving them permission to do that. No one can make you bitter. No one can make you angry unless you give them permission to do that. Your circumstances can't destroy you. They don't define you, but it's your response to those circumstances. That's what defines you. Oh, what was that? Those are some key statements in looking at this verse I want you to keep in mind. I don't know what in the world's going on. Jeff's not back there. If I'm doing something or if he's doing something or if it's the lightning, God going to strike me dead here. Control the things that influence you. Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not. Don't forget them. Neither go into thy brother's house in the day of calamity. That's actually the most interesting statement in this verse. For better is a neighbor that is near than a brother who is far off. And we're going to divide this into three sections here, you see. Number one, carefully select your friends. Carefully select your friends. Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not. A best friend, a wise person, is one that's been proven by the test of time. And that's why it says your father's friend. Someone that's been a friend to you and a friend to your father, an influence to your, especially in Christian realms and in Christianity. Someone who's been a godly, good godly influence to your father. Don't forsake him for something new and fresh, which is a popular thing to do, starting with my generation. And this generation is notorious in forsaking the old timers for something new, bigger, and better. King Rehoboam, remember him? He made the fatal mistake that ultimately destroyed the nation of Israel. He lost much of the kingdom because of this one mistake. 1 Kings chapter 12 and verse number 8. Most of you know, maybe have an idea what that verse says. It says, "But he, Rehoboam, forsook the counsel of the old men which they had given him, and consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, and which stood before him." Rehoboam's fatal mistake was what? He sought the counsel from the young men. He forsook the old men. He forsook his father's friend. He forsook his father's generation. You know, it's interesting to me when I read old sermons and read old Bible commentaries and read history, the old timers had it right before they had all these self-help books that we have today. We got all the self-helps, the home improvement books, Christian bookstores, as well as secular bookstores are just full of them, but our families are a mess. Families in church aren't much better, if any better, than the families in the world. Yet we've got all these newfangled ideas. I tell you, this book is all that we need. Everything we need to know is right there, if we just take it for what it says. The old timers had something that we really have a hard time understanding today. And then we've got, I just watched something today, I really want to show it. How many know if I say the name Stephen Anderson? How many know who that is? More than I thought would. He's the poster child of a smart aleck young preacher. We got a whole lot of smart aleck young preachers. Somebody forwarded me a video that I really want to show it in church sometime, but I wasn't sure how many people know it, but I'd have a problem showing it in church because of the foul language that he uses. They show him saying some things while he's preaching, and it's vile. I wouldn't talk that way in private, let alone in public. But he's got these new great ideas. And he's literally destroying churches around the country. But the first thing, when I first heard of him years ago, I was hoping nobody in church would ever hear of him, but he has gained some ground since then. I just thought, this is kind of strange. Here's this young man telling us that all the generations before him were wrong, and all his followers were other smart aleck young preachers. That's the category I put him in. He doesn't have one adult follower, but he's got a whole lot of smart aleck young preachers. Love my favorite statement of Brother Dave Smith was, there's the dumbest thing that God ever created was a Bible college graduate. They think they got all the answers. They're a step worse than a teenager that thinks they got all the answers because now they have an education to support their answers, and they're completely forsaking thy father's friend, the past generations, what they've known. And I'll say this, and you see this throughout the book of Proverbs and throughout the Bible, wisdom, true wisdom, or biblical wisdom, comes with biblical maturity. A young person doesn't automatically have maturity or wisdom. It's something that comes with time. You've got to travel around the block a few times. Somebody asked me probably 10 years ago, "Do you ever have a desire to write a book?" I said, "No, but I have a desire to read a book someday." I said, "If I ever get smart enough that I feel like I know something to write something down, maybe I will." Sometimes I was just thinking today, maybe it'll hit me by the time I'm about 70. Maybe I'll get smart enough to know enough to write something down. That might be a help to somebody. Because I've watched this in my life, and I watch it in other people's life, that eventually someone comes to the point where they have all the answers, and then they realize they really don't know beans. They thought they had all the answers, but they don't know a stinking thing. And that's where they start to gain wisdom. And the longer they travel down that road, the wiser they become. Some of us are grateful for our poor grades in school that prove to us that we don't have any wisdom on our own. There's no room for pride and arrogance. Boy, I got all the answers. I don't have any answers. Right, guys? There's justification. I saw Jacob. Hey, there is hope for me. But in reality, when it comes to wisdom, someone who struggles through school and struggles through a lot of basic areas, they're sometimes light years ahead of someone when they get an adult, because they realize it's not my wisdom. I don't impress God. I don't impress others. God's not impressed with that a bit. God is impressed with my humility and begging and pleading, let him that lacketh wisdom, ask God, and God will give it to us. But wisdom comes with biblical. Carefully select thy friend. I'm grateful that God taught me, and I've mentioned this before, that God taught me as a young age, partially because I had my father was, of course, he's older than me. When I say that, older than most of my peers. Parents, because my parents, I was born later. I was the 10th child, so I'm the oldest of the four little kids. But because my parents were maybe a little bit more mature than most of my friends, and then when I got saved, my pastor was an old man. He's probably younger than I am now, but I saw him as an old man, and I saw the wisdom in just sitting and listening to someone that's been around for a while. God had to humble me and teach me that as a young person, but that's when we start to grow. But carefully select, who are you? Are you going to choose the ones that, you know, they know how to use a computer, they know the lingo and the language, and they know how to get away with things? Or are you going to choose somebody that has biblical wisdom? Carefully select your friend. And then, secondly, this verse talks about the entanglements of kinship. Well, you see that. Neither go to thy brother's house in the day of calamity. That's a fascinating statement. Don't go to your brother's house in the day of calamity. When heartache, when burdens, when troubles, when difficulties come, don't go to your kinfolk. What do you mean by that? You know, I've noticed this in people's lives. The statement that I put there in your paper, something becomes obvious when we come to a time of crisis. Our church and our God becomes very obvious. Who do we pray to when we get in trouble? Who do we go to for counsel when we get in trouble? Some folks go down to the bar. Some folks go to their friends at work. Some folks go to the Rotary Club or the Disco Club, or I don't know, this club or that club. Or do we go to God and to church? He says, neither go to thy brother's house in the day of calamity. Now, it's going to come into full perspective when we look at the last statement there. But our God, who we trust in God, and who is our church? Sometimes I hear family members are going through a hard time, maybe a sickness or a death, or even people in our community. And the time that they need to talk to God the most, they don't have time for the God of heaven. And the time that they need God's people's fellowship the most, well, I don't want to go to church. I don't want to face those. That's when we need it the most. But instead, we go to our brother's house, our kinfolk's house. Well, you know, when crisis comes, the first thing I want to do is talk to Jesus in prayer. That's first and foremost. He's my God. And then when times get rough, I'm running to my to the house of God, to church, not to my brother's house, not to my parents' house, not to this my kinfolk's house. Mention this. There's two sources. Then you know what the words are. If you looked up the verse, you may know the verses there. There are two sources of truth. And by the way, these two sources of truth do not contradict each other. Now, I don't want to confuse you, because the Catholics say there's two sources of truth and the Bible's the low one on the totem pole. We're not talking about that. There are two sources that God says are truth. In John 14:6, what's the first one? Jesus. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Jesus is a source of truth. And then John 17:17, a couple of chapters later, when Jesus was praying after that message he finished in chapter 14:15 and 16, in the real Lord's Prayer, in John 17:17, he says, what is truth? Thy word is truth. The Bible is our source of truth. Now, getting at something here, the pillar and the ground of truth, the foundation, the place where the truth is kept, where it's preached, where it's taught, where it's lived, is where? 1 Timothy 3:15, somebody said it, is the church. The church of Jesus Christ. The pillar and ground. Now you understand, when the Bible talks about a church, it's not talking about an invisible kingdom out there somewhere. It's talking about a local assembly of people. If I've got struggles, if I've got difficulties in my life, the first place I'm going to go, I've got plenty of brothers I could go to. Plenty of shoulders I could cry on. Plenty of family I could cry on. But the first place I'm going is to Jesus Christ in prayer. The second place is the house of God, with God's people. My family, let me say this, family ties are often the cause of spiritual disaster. Family ties are often the cause of spiritual disasters. Well, I can't do that. What's my family going to think? Well, I would be going against my parents if I got saved. By the way, the devil threw that one at me. I can't join a Baptist church. What are my parents going to say? In fact, when my dad was chewing me out, I had a hard time holding the laugh in, because he just threw this one at me. What would your Aunt Patty think? Now, Aunt Patty was the one aunt that had the bright red glowing lipstick that always chased you down and gave you a big kiss on both sides and left a permanent mark. She was just a little bit weird. And I thought, what in the world is... She was kind of the family joke between the siblings, of course, not... What does Aunt Patty have to do with anything? And it didn't even dawn on me until a few months later. I was looking through some things and found out that she was my godparent when I was baptized. She was the one that's responsible for my spiritual well-being. Says a lot there. I didn't even know that. There was something that was supposed to be reminded of while you're growing up, you know. But our family ties sometimes keep us not only from getting saved, but from doing what God wants us to do in our life. When God saved me, just seems like months, I guess it was almost probably 6 months after I got saved, we went to a missions conference. I knew it was because it was in the fall. I got saved in the spring. God called me to be a missionary. And I argued with him for a long time, still arguing with him from time to time. But I surrendered to be a missionary and was planning on being a missionary. It was actually my fourth year in Bible college, which was 6 years later. That's a long story. I'm 4 years into 6 years, like a lot of people do. It's actually my senior year in Bible college that I really confirmed the fact that that God wanted me to pastor. Gave me a desire to start a church. It was my heart's desire. And And I told him, okay, God, I was been planning for these years now to move. And I didn't know when I surrendered to be a missionary that there was such a thing as a furlough. I thought when you went to the mission field, you never came home. You stayed there till you died. That's just in my mind what it was. When I surrendered, that's what I thought I was surrendering for. I was signing up for life. And planning on that, and of course in Bible college I understood what a missionary was, the deputation and furlough and all those kind of things. But then God said, okay, I was looking forward to, and some of my siblings would say, what are you going to go live in a grass hut somewhere in Africa? I said, I'd love to. That's what God wants me to do. I'm looking forward to it. But then God redirected my steps and told me He wants me to pastor. And so I started looking in places to start a church. And I told God this, and I said, God, you can do whatever you want to, but if I had my preference, I want to stay close enough to my family so I can be a spiritual influence on them. Many of them were not saved yet. And many people pray for that because their family is going to be an influence on them. Then God sent me to Amboy, Illinois. I don't know what in the world Amboy, Illinois has to offer. But the fact that, what?
You made him mad.
Yeah, I made him real mad. He said, okay, I'll keep you close to home, but you're going to go in the swamps of Amboy for the rest of your life. Yes, sir. But there's something about being close. You see, I wanted my children to know their grandparents. I wanted them to know their aunts and uncles, but I didn't want to be so close that their aunts and uncles and their grandparents could influence them spiritually. And there's a big difference. About 50 miles is a good distance. We can be a help and influence them, but they don't have to be an influence on us and direct us. I didn't want my kinfolk, my siblings, my cousins or nephews and nieces, or my kids' cousins, would be a very negative influence on them because they're not saved. Some of them are saved, they're not living the way that I want my children to go, and time has proven that there's a direction that they've headed and that it's going off the deep end, many of them. But I want to be close enough yet far enough. I want to influence them, but I don't want them to influence me. And my family, neither go to thy brother's house on the day of thy calamity. My church, and I know some people say, well, that's because you're the pastor. This was long before God ever let me be a pastor. My church means more to me than my kinfolk. And I say that because a lot of people say that, but that's my grandma, that's my aunt, that's my cousin. So, if I have trouble, I'm going to church, not my kinfolk. And I've watched many people destroyed, compromised, or lost because they're afraid to upset their kinfolk. Let's go on to the last part of the verse. For better is a neighbor that is near than a brother far off. Many times I've read that verse and I realized a long time ago, and I studied it more to get a clear understanding of this. This verse doesn't mean what I thought it used to think it meant. I'm going to say this. The best fellowship you can choose. That's what we're looking at here. The best, better. Better is a neighbor that is near than a brother that's far off. The way most people think of that statement is, well, it's better to have somebody close by that you can talk to than have to travel a distance to talk to somebody. That's not what we're teaching here. That's the way a lot of us would read it. That's the way I understood it for years. But that's really not the teaching here given to us. Let me just define what is a neighbor. What is a neighbor? Someone who, you can probably guess what goes in here, lives next to you, and your neighbors know you, maybe better than you want them to know you. I could tell some stories, but it might incriminate somebody that we've lived next to in different times. But they get to know you pretty well. And that's what neighbors are supposed to do. And today we are so overprotective of our privacy and everything. And I say, if I have no secrets, I don't care what my neighbors know. I don't care if they get the wrong impression. They'll figure it out eventually. But a neighbor is someone who lives next to you, someone who knows you. And by the way, that's someone in church. Folks in church know you. You folks know me better than my siblings know me. We get to know each other pretty well. And then it's better is a neighbor that is near than a brother far off. Now, a brother far off literally means they're knit together by kinship, but not by truth. They may be related to me, but they're not saved. They may be related to me, but they don't believe Jesus is God. They may be related to me, but they don't believe in the great doctrines of the Bible. Albert Barnes, one of the commentaries I like to read, it says this about this verse. Better is a neighbor who is really near in heart and spirit than a brother who, though closer by blood, is far off in feeling. They might be closer to us, even geographically. They might be next door to us, but they're not on the same page spiritually. And that's really the understanding here. A brother that is far off is not talking about where they live, but where they are spiritually. And you're better to be around those that know you and understand you and know and worship the God that you worship than those that, well, they're my kinfolk. I got to give them special privilege. I got to go to them in my time of need. You might not be real wise in doing that. I have chosen, and we'll give you a few statements here and conclude here. I have chosen to make Christ Church my priority. One of the things that to me was the biggest struggle in my new Christian life is the rejection, total rejection, the seeking of my family to not only reject me, but destroy me. And I thought, God, that's not fair. And I, for a while, let my circumstances rule me. I said, I'm not going to be controlled by my circumstances, but I'm going to learn to respond properly to those circumstances. I'm glad God allowed that into my life because He showed me the importance of the need of a local church. The family of God. A church family, which is kind of a redundancy. A church is a family. And if I see it as anything less, I don't understand what a church is. And my church means more to me than somebody that's related to me. Even though we're related by blood, we're not related spiritually. And God's... Now, the problem with that, and this is where we all struggle. The problem with that, and I learned this early, just like everybody learned this early, God's church is made up of people. There's the problem. And you know what people are? They're people. I don't expect people to be anything but people. I don't expect the preacher to be anything but a people. I don't expect people in church to be anything but a people. And people are sinners. Now, granted, we're sinners saved by God's grace. That means we're perfect, right? Now, only I'm perfect. You're not. No. That's the attitude that most of us had. Well, I've got it all right. Now, you're the one. No. If I've got a problem with someone, it's my problem, not theirs. As long as they take care of this and do this and bend over backwards and come crawling on their knees and kiss my toes and wash my ears out with a wet willy or whatever they want to do, I'm not going to be happy. I'm not going to let them determine my happiness. You say, don't people hurt you? Oh, yeah, they hurt. And every time, and I didn't understand this till I pastored for actually a little while. I say, well, folks come all the time and say, well, so-and-so did this, and they really hurt me. Don't you ever get hurt. Yeah, but I've learned to be an adult. Hello? When someone hurts, my heart... And by the way, every time a church member has somebody that upset with them or they're upset with us, and they come to me with a problem, I just scratch my head and say, you can multiply that by 100. And that's what it means to be a pastor. You just need to be an adult. And when someone hurts, when someone stabs you and walks away and goes around telling this and that in the community, has a bitter, angry spirit that they just will not forgive, they won't forget, my heart's broken. And no one's heart is broken like the pastor's heart is broken often. And people don't understand that. And I'm not saying this for pity. I'm just saying that's the reality. My heart is broken when someone leaves the church for any reason. And folks, and the sad thing is some of God's people are, don't you care about them? Oh, yeah. More than you will ever know. My heart's broken, but I cannot allow it to break me. And there's the difference. I'm going to keep smiling. I'm going to keep rejoicing. I'm going to keep singing. I'm going to keep praying. I'm going to keep loving, keep forgiving, keep helping, keep preaching, keep encouraging, keep being a blessing to everybody, even the ones that are out to destroy me. It doesn't matter. They don't define me. I define who I am. My reaction to what they do defines who I am. I'm not going to be bitter and angry and hold on to things and try to get even and all those things. And I'm going to add sugar to their bitter cup and serve them with refreshing kindness rather than getting back and getting even. And I'm going to do this until they do this. And I don't care what. I'm going to love them anyway, no matter what they do. And I've watched many people, not only in that way, but in allowing kinfolk to be more influential and mean more than God's people. Going back to both the last two things, I'll say this. Many people self-destruct while they blame God's people for their self-destruction. I mean, well, they did this to me, and I got out of church. Or maybe God brought them into your life so that you would become an adult. Well, learn how to deal with things. Learn how to forgive. Learn how to love when you don't get love back. Learn how to walk with a brother that's born for contention. I'm convinced of this, that some people's spiritual gift is to make life miserable for everybody around them. That's their spiritual gift. And I joke about that, but in reality, that matures me as a Christian. I learned to love him anyways, learned to forgive him anyways. And the sad thing is this, you've heard people say, when mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Right? And when sissy ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. I've watched more people self-destruct because, you know, the influence of their family, whether it be their wife or their mother or their children, especially adult girls, they tend to destroy a lot of families and a lot of churches. And then the sad thing is, when we allow those things to destroy us, we blame God when it's really us. God, you allowed this to happen in my life. God will give you grace if you learn to trust Him. God will give you grace if you learn to walk with Him, learn to pray, and determine, I'm going to stay in church no matter what. A brother that lives, or I'm going to say this, it's better as a neighbor that is near than a brother that is far off. Don't go to, you know, thank God for family that's saved and walking with God. But just because they're family doesn't mean they're right. That they ought to be our dearest friends. Yeah, I'm talking about siblings and parents and aunts and uncles and those things. And sometimes we'll forsake the things of God to try to please family members that in reality, if we saw them as anything except other than a family member, we realize they hate God. They hate everything that God stands, but they're kinfolk. Well, that's God. We ought to be praying that they get saved. We ought to be reaching out to them instead of letting them control our life. Or the things that happen to us, they don't define us, but it's our reaction to those things that define us. You know, as somebody was telling me today that they used to drink and think, I'm grateful that I grew up in a family. My dad wasn't saved, but he determined as a teenager he would never touch alcohol. I'm out of time, but I started a story. I got to finish it. And it wasn't because he got saved, not because he had a spiritual awakening, but because his dad was a drunk. And he saw what drunkenness can do to a family. So he determined all his life he's not going to touch alcohol. And I'm grateful that I grew up in that environment. And someone says, well, alcoholism is a disease. It's hereditary. Well, it might be, so I don't want to take the first drip. Because if I start, I might be a drunk like my grandfather was. And maybe my dad understood that. It's the only, if it is a disease, it's something that we bring upon ourselves. And bitterness and anger and unforgiveness and all those things are things that we bring upon ourselves. Because, well, I just don't get along with that person. Well, they're your neighbor. They're your church. That's your family. They mean more than your physical family. And sometimes we get that completely backwards. And thine own friend and thy father's friend, forsake not. Neither go into the brother's house, into thy brother's house, in the day of calamity. Don't go there. Go to God's people. For better is a neighbor that is near your church than a brother that's far. They may be kinfolk, but they're not in the same place spiritually as I need to be. Father,